Well, welcome. It's really great to see a lot of people out there. I'm curious if you could just give me a little bit of background. How many people are current public health students? Awesome. And how many people are work in public health schools or? Awesome. Okay, which gives me a little bit of perspective in terms of how to tailor this. Again, I'm not going to talk a lot about the actual work and outcomes that I did in Guatemala. I'd be more than happy to talk to anybody about that afterwards. But I think that I wish I had heard something like this, I think, before I came to school. And so I hope to provide some perspective for both providers, I'm working in healthcare now, but for professors and administrators and students. So I hope this is helpful. A little bit of background on me, because I think that what I found so fascinating about public health school is that we came from very different backgrounds. Some people came right out of school. I had, as Scott said, I kind of found my path, unfortunately, through many years of school, figuring out what I wanted to do. So I am a nurse. I worked in labor and delivery in a big inner city hospital in Washington, D.C., and then kind of found public health, as none of us, someone said yesterday in a talk I heard that no one at, you know, in fourth grade says, I want to be in public health. I mean, you don't know that. You may love the things about public health, but I didn't know that that's what it was called. So I did come in with some experience working in Latin America. I was already fluent in Spanish. I had taken a year off in between high school and college and lived in Costa Rica and in Peru. So I did come with some experience, which I thought was helpful, but not to say that you can't at all have a wonderful experience and a different experience when you're going on your practicum for the first time, you know, maybe outside the U.S. So I did do my practicum in the Western Highlands of Guatemala. As you can see, that's where Guatemala is. What I found is I ended up, people come to their practicums through a variety of ways. I actually chose to do a practicum where no BU student had gone, which made it a little bit more legwork. I made a lot more emails to Scott. Thankfully, he was incredibly involved, and I'll talk a little later about what I think helps a school have a successful practicum program, and part of that is having a Scott where you are, because I could not have done it without a lot of help and a lot of support. So I actually had the opportunity to go to Guatemala about 6 months before my practicum in January of that year, and kind of did some research on my own. I was fortunate, not everyone gets that opportunity, but I was going kind of on a personal trip and had an idea in my mind that I wanted to do my practicum. So I actually spoke with a couple different nonprofit organizations when I was there and identified Vivamos Mejor as one of them. They're an organization that had not just health, but they had like six different departments, and in fact my husband went with me, and he's a geologist and he worked for them as well. So there was environmental health and maternal child health was one of them. So I lived in Panajachel, which is, I don't know if you can see it, but it was on Lake Atitlan down here. And I ended up working, Vivamos Mejor had their headquarters there, so I thought, oh, I'll live there, because I assumed I would work there. And my husband worked there, about a two-minute bike ride from where we were living. I worked 2.5 hours north each way. So I woke up quite early and got home quite late. I actually worked up in the Western Highlands. So I lived down here, and I worked, or did my practicum, about three buses, a little tuk-tuk, and a hike away each way. So as we go into these practicums with an idea of what we're doing, it doesn't often happen that way. And just to give you a little bit of background of what got me so interested in Guatemala, the maternal mortality rate in Guatemala as a whole country is 290 out of 100,000, but the maternal mortality rate in the Western Highlands, where I was about 450 out of 100,000. And the infant mortality rate was the highest in Central America at 38 deaths out of 1,000 live births. The skilled birth attendant rate, so the skilled attendants that are present at a woman's birth, was only 41%. And we're not talking certified midwives, we're talking any skilled birth attendant. So that's the lowest in the Western Hemisphere. And then the fertility rate is the highest in Latin America at 4.4 births per woman. So that's what kind of perked my interest when, you know, as a student, when you really are overwhelmed and you hear about all these really devastating global issues in school, and then you think, how am I going to pick one to work on? that for me, that was my, okay, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to look more into. So I had a plan. I had gone there 6 months before. I had everything worked out. I had raised a little money to put together some books, and I was going to go there and train traditional birth attendants. We had this whole project, and none of that happened. I think I skipped this one. I did get there. I'll talk about how I got there in a second. But I got there and I ended up, as many people have already talked about, and I'm guessing we'll talk about, my plan beforehand was not the plan that happened when I got there. The midwives were kind of doing other things, and the books that I had raised the money for never were made. Don't know where that went. And so I got there, and I had just taken a Mondrian evaluation class, which I loved, and I got there, and as you identified, they started saying, okay, well, you can't do that, but we'd really love you to do this, and while you're doing that, we'd really love you to do this, too, and while you're doing that, you know, just, you're already 2.5 hours up, just hike 45 minutes up to this other village, and we really want you to do this there. And so it was very overwhelming, and I think that it helped us book the language. I think it definitely took me a couple weeks to get my mind wrapped around what I wanted to do and what I thought would be beneficial, as well as what I could bring to them. So after a little while, we decided that my labor and delivery experience would be best served as evaluating the prenatal care services that were being provided by the nonprofit organization. So they had a system where they were nurses that would go in and they would hike into these villages once a month, and anybody who was pregnant, they'd get a list from the kind of village liaison, and they would go and they would do prenatal care. And I had the country norms or the checklist of what Guatemala said that they wanted anybody, no matter if it was nonprofit, the Ministry of Health, whoever, to be doing when they were doing their prenatal care visits. And then I had the checklist or the protocol, the policy that the nonprofit organization had, and they were absolutely not congruent. They were totally different. Nonprofit organization had different priorities that they thought were necessary to do within the country. So part of what I did was make one checklist and one policy. They ended up making it a policy. I kind of vetted it, and I did some, you know, I had people in the Ministry of Health look at it, and everyone was happy with it. And then after I developed that, then I did an evaluation using that tool in a bunch of different villages, and I can talk about that if we have time at the end. So you can see me, I'm working with some traditional midwives, and I spoke Spanish, but they didn't. They spoke a bunch of different dialects, so we kind of communicated with smiles. I'm evaluating, as you can see, a pregnant woman over there, and I'm actually evaluating this nurse. And then I'm asking the patients, in their broken Spanish and my attempt at their dialect, whether they were asked these questions that the nurse was supposed to ask, etc. So that's what I ended up doing. There were definitely some cross-cultural and workplace challenges that I think are probably generalizable to many developing countries and even developed countries. Cultural, political, environmental, resource, poor settings, and then language. So, for example, what my husband was working on was how to prevent these landslides. They have landslides and mudslides thanks to hurricanes, and they were, you know, we were right around the lake. As you can see, there was a bus in front of us, and my bus was stopped here, and this happened like in between the two buses that were driving. So very dangerous. I definitely held my breath every single day we went by. So environmental challenges are real. They often prevent us from doing the work that we set out to do. They're scary. They're unpredictable. There are many challenges that we know about that we can kind of avoid if possible. But environmental ones we can't really avoid or predict very often. The men of the community, as you can see, we're not super psyched to have a female there kind of asking them what they're doing. That was a challenge. That was the actually a very nice, comparatively a nice exam room for these women. So here's what I think are keys to a successful international practicum. I was incredibly fortunate, as Scott mentioned, to have some funding assistance from the Santander Bank. BU is very fortunate to be a recipient of this. I hope that every program has something like this. I know it doesn't always. I couldn't have gone without it. And that, so funding is huge. If there's people from, you know, here from other programs advocating, you know, to get funding for your students, and students advocating for themselves is huge. BU, as I said, having a supportive practicum office is clutch. I don't know how many emails I exchanged with you, Scott, but, and having him speak Spanish was actually ideal because I didn't have to translate all my documents to my site supervisor. Having a field supervisor and a site that you can work with. I had some challenges, we can talk about that later if we need to, but being the first time, being BU had never been there, so I definitely worked out some kinks, and there are things, for example, I wouldn't recommend another, or a woman going there who doesn't speak the language and is not comfortable with the cultural challenges. So there are some things that I learned that I hope I brought back to the practicum office that will help someone in the future. And then having a sense of adventure, I don't think you can go on any of a single international practicum without it. Bringing home, it definitely helps that BU has a structure where we can present, this is the evaluation I ended up making, that's my culminating experience, kind of our final thesis-like paper. So how I translated my work into the classroom was through some presentations, was through papers, and also just bringing back some tangible deliverables, which I think were helpful. I think some skills I learned too were that you really can implement, and for professors that are here, I was so fortunate to have just taken classes that I got out there. I had no clue I was going to do an evaluation project whatsoever. And I got out there and I emailed my professor and I said, you know, okay, remember how we just did that mock evaluation? Well, yeah, I'm doing it for real now. So having professors that are really helpful, and really, I used absolutely every single skill I learned in the classroom, and I put it all together in 3 months. I'm happy to take questions at the end, but I can't emphasize enough having a supportive program and a sense of adventure. These are the women that I worked with, and the men, and this is where I had hiked into every day, and that's the group from Vivamos Mejor that I worked with. So thank you very much. Thank you.